From WBEZ Chicago and PRX, this is Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. This year, Paul McCartney released a new album, and John Lennon has a new box set of Imagine. Today, we examine the post-Beatles careers of John and Paul, both the highs and the lows.
Plus, we review new albums by rapper Vince Staples and jazz drummer Micaiah McRaven. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and coming up, we're going to review FM, the latest album from Vince Staples.
Better calm down. Left side, pulled out that life. Right side.
And Universal Beings, the new album from drummer and hip-hop beatmaker Micaiah McRaven. But first, we're going to discuss a particularly controversial topic, comparing the strengths and weaknesses of John Lennon and Paul McCartney's output after the Beatles.
Imagine no possessions.
Yeah, and the reason, Jim, I think we decided to dive into this now is because both of these artists are once again in the news. They're never really out of the news.
No, it's ubiquitous.
We never quite get them out of our consciousness. And, you know, McCartney just came out with a new solo record, Egypt Station, which we reviewed. Lennon's estate has, overseen this box set of the Imagine recording sessions from the early 70s, arguably his most famous solo record, with his most famous solo song on it as a title track.
Well, the context I'll give listeners too, Greg, is that neither you nor I were there at the height of Beatlemania, okay? So our entire careers as critics of popular music, we've been wrestling with the Beatles. We are both huge fans of all four of them.
Yeah, sure.
We don't want to see this group and these individuals as carved in granite on Mount Rockmore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's always fun, I think, to dig deep into a catalog of music that we think we know inside out and look for new nuggets of revelation.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. I mean, it's I think the shorthand version of this discussion is always that McCartney wrote the lighter songs, the poppier tunes. Lennon was the rocker. And obviously that conflates a lot of ideas, and it's really wrongheaded.
Really wrong, just on the face of it. You know, and then it's sort of an unfair match, of course, because we got basically only a decade of solo John, and it took him a while in the beginning to get going. Let me tell you, that'll be one of the problems with Lennon's career.
I mean, he had three recordings with Yoko Ono before he even left the Beatles. Then his big emancipatory statement, the Plastic Ono Band record, that put him on the map as a solo artist.
A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be.
Yeah, but I think it was in part, and there are moments of greatness on that record, don't get me wrong, but it's in part, and I think this never gets said, because the first three albums he gave us after the Beatles were so wretchedly awful. They started during the Beatles. I'm talking about Unfinished Music 1, two versions, Unfinished Music 2, Life with the Lions, Wedding Album, so 1968, 1969, those three albums, right?
Yeah.
We can picture him and Yoko and various people coming in and out, rolling around on the floor, finger painting. That's basically, except far more annoying than that. Those are unlistenable records.
Well, I think in some ways they were his, I want out. I want to break down all the walls.
Yeah.
I'm going to make music with this woman that I love.
Yeah.
And screw the Beatles in some ways, because was just tired of everything.
And music is somewhat in quotes there. You know, they're going through primal therapy. They're doing all sorts of spiritual and chemical experimentation. What they are not is consistently good records.
Yes, he was very up and down during this period of time. And Plastic Ono Band was a straight up rock and roll record, very raw, very, everything was on the surface there.
Yeah.
Well, well, well,
you know, since then, you know, he made what many people would call a timeless piece of music with Imagine. You're going to play a Lennon track from the solo years, that's inevitably the go-to. It dwarfs everything else.
Well, I thought one way that we could illustrate what we both like and dislike about each of these musical giants' solo careers is to play one of our favorite songs from those canons, and also one of the worst. You know, so again, Greg, we're not actually taking sides in this debate. We're both going to talk about things that we loved by Lennon and McCartney in the solo years. I will say I think Lennon had more songs I truly love. Instant Karma, Happy Christmas, mm-hmm. War Is Over. Imagine, that title track, Working Class Hero. I mean, I really had to struggle to figure out which song I wanted to illustrate Lennon at his very best in the solo years. I'm going with a song from Imagine, 1971, Gimme Some Truth. Oh my God. The fact that in 2018, this song, which is a furious shout in the faces of anyone who would control him, or us, it's as necessary today as it was in 71.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, 71, in the wake of all the turbulence of 1968, the Vietnam War, this government having an FBI file on this man who's just trying to live his life, Nixon wanting to kick him out of the United States. This is the Lennon I love, the rocker with significant melody, as well as the super adroit wordsmith. You know, there is a lot of Dylan, there always was, and via Dylan, the beats. All I want is the truth, just give me some truth. No short-haired, yellow-bellied son of Tricky Dick's got a Mother Hubbard soft soap me with a pocket full of hope. Money for rope, money for dope. Man, it's just, I love it.
I've had enough of
Yeah, I would say that track's extraordinary, speaking truth to whatever power was trying to control him.
But having fun while doing it.
Absolutely. And the Imagine album is more sprawling in terms of its musical ambition. Plastic Ono Band is just a punch in the face.
It really
resonated as a kid who kind of grew up being inspired by punk music. Now, the records after that, after those first two,
it's
very sketchy and very filled with filler. Specifically, the Walls and Bridges record in 1974, near the end of this solo period before he went on hiatus, was just a mediocre batch of mostly mid-tempo, bland rock and roll. It was an attempt to make a record that would be mainstream, but it just fell flat. It didn't seem to have that energy and the invective that Lennon normally would bring to the Beatles and to his early solo work.
And there's drug addiction and alcohol abuse.
Yeah, there was a lot of indulgence during this period. But and the point I'm trying to make is that even on these lesser Lennon records, there are gems scattered throughout them. And on Walls and Bridges, the song to me that really jumps out, and still I can play to this day and be just swept away by it, is Number 9 Dream. I think that's just a wonderful piece of music. And the lyrics are almost gibberish-like. Lennon said this song basically came to him in a dream.
Yeah.
And he wrote down lyrics that make no sense in some ways. You know, there's this phrase in there that's in some made-up language. I mean, you know.
Well, gugu-guju, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah, he was not above that.
You know, bawakawa, puse-puse, what does that mean exactly?
Right.
It doesn't mean anything. Lennon would say, you know, those are just sounds that were coming into my head. But the melody of this song is so beautiful, combined with the string orchestrations. Lennon said he took the inspiration for the string orchestrations for what he had done for Nilsson on a cover of a Jimmy Cliff song, Many Rivers Across. And he said, I love those strings so much, I want to bring back that sound on this particular track. People always say, McCartney is the melodist in the band, you know.
Lennon was more
straightforward. This is a beautiful, sumptuous melody by John Lennon, number 9 Dream on Sound of Music.
So Dream number 9, Greg, a great choice. We didn't even talk about Mother, although you've waxed rhapsodic about it in the past. And Cold Turkey is a really good song. I could go on and on with the Lennon highlights. You want to make the case, though, I think, that McCartney has just as many, if not more?
Well, yes, I will make that case. And believe me, this is not something that I held as gospel for a long time. I was among those doubters about McCartney as just a complete whitewash as a solo artist. And I rediscovered some stuff that I had dismissed early on. And I think McCartney suffered the same fate because his work was always being compared to what he had done in the Beatles. I think if you remove it from that, you know, huge shadow, some of this stuff really stands out. And again, like I said with Lennon, I think even on McCartney's lesser albums, you can find some really good stuff. You know, you think about those first couple of solo records, they were incredibly sparse. People are going, what's going on?
Yeah.
There's hardly anything on these records. They're so stripped back.
He's out on the farm. He's just doing his little ditties in between milking the cows or whatever he was doing.
And some of that stuff sounds really good.
That would be something. It really would be something. Something to meet you in the falling rain, mama. Meet you in the falling rain.
Then he formed that band Wings, which people, the level of musicianship in that band was so thoroughly mediocre, it was not anywhere near McCartney's level of talent.
The bombast.
Yeah.
The bombast of Wings. Everything's on 11 at all times. Why not, you know, why just have a simple pop song when you can have a super arranged multi-part suite? You know, McCartney is nasty in a way that Lennon is not. Now, Lennon tried to torture us with some of that Primal Scream sonic experimentation with Yoko Ono, those first three albums, moments throughout the rest of the catalog. You know, but it's in the Sonic Youth spirit, the John Cage, Lamont Young. You know, I'm going to call it avant. Really, I'm just going to be as obnoxiously noisy as possible. Take this, right? You know, but McCartney, he has this insidious curse of earwormism, where it gets in your head, and no matter how much you hate the song, you can't get it out.
I disagree with you that the Wings stuff was all bad. Wings is a controversial band. I think there was some merit to what they put out, though. I think the real period that we can definitely agree on is 80s McCartney.
Oof.
Is really difficult for a lot of people to hear now. I think McCartney was very much a lost soul in the 80s. He didn't understand, how do I incorporate this new technology into my music? How do I fit in in the pop sphere. I think one of the big issues here is that McCartney wanted to be a still viable commercial artist and couldn't figure out how to insert himself in there.
See, that's the thing. I don't think Lennon cared. I think David Geffen and Yoko cared during Double Fantasy, but I think for the most part, Lennon didn't care about selling records. Mm-hmm. And McCartney, not only has he always cared about selling records, he wants to be still the pop songwriter of his generation, of any generation.
Yeah.
You know, after you've been in the Beatles, right, what do you got left to prove? Nothing.
That's absolutely true. I mean, your body of work speaks for itself in that band, for sure. But I would say that there are gems, again, like with Lennon, those 2000s records from McCartney are each of them, I could find some songs on there that I like. I could easily make, you know, fill up what used to be known as a, you know, 45-minute cassette side.
Yeah.
Both sides with McCartney songs from his solo years, and I would include a number of songs from his latter day period.
Everybody gonna dance around, everybody gonna hit the ground, everybody gonna dance around tonight.
Let's each play a great McCartney song
all right.
The solo years. What do you got?
You know, the song that's always struck me as his most powerful post Beatles is Every Night, from the McCartney LP in 1970. You know, I'm glad he had so much love in his life. We should all be so happy. When he expressed it well, without the smarm and Hallmark card cheese, it was just beautiful. Every night I just want to go out, get out of my head. You know, as someone who's restless.
Every night I just want to go out, get out of my head. Every day I don't want to get up, get out of my bed.
But he doesn't. What he does is stay home and be with you. And then the way with that be with you, the way that song takes off, you know, it's a simple little acoustic ditty. But then when I'm with you, the music highlights the joy of being with this person he loves. And it's a simple, simple song that is him at his love song best. Every night. I mean, that's as great, Greg, as a love song gets. And we're going to have to talk in a couple of minutes about the many, many bad Paul McCartney love songs. By the way, let's stay positive for a minute.
Well, I think there are many positives with McCartney, far outweighed by the negatives, I would say. But then again, that's going to happen when you make 25 records like McCartney has made. You're not going to hit the ball out of the park with everyone. Sometimes you're not even going to get the ball out of the infield to belabor a baseball analogy.
I think
analogy.
There's plenty where he's not even playing with a ball. He's playing with a brick.
So you made the case, you know, you're saying that Wings never did it for you.
Oh, wait, bombast, all bombast.
There's some bombast for sure. But as a credible 70s rock act, I think they did some songs that hold up surprisingly well. And part of it is McCartney's strength as a songwriter, his ability to sort of craft these multi-part songs. You know, the title track from Band on the Run is a good example of a multi-part McCartney song that somehow works. He's trying to make pop music that's somewhat complex. I, And as an example, there's no one I know who listens to Wings at the Speed of Sound voluntarily.
No.
But I would argue that there is a really good song on that record, and it's called Beware My Love. And it's a 6-minute song that McCartney, again, one of those multi-part compositions that starts out with these beautiful but haunting and cautionary harmony vocals, acoustic guitar, a little harmonium in it, and then slowly builds into this rock section in the middle of the song and then returns to the acoustic part at the end. It's, first of all, I love the symmetry of the composition, but I also love the energy that he brings to his vocals, the way he's able to switch from this dreamy, haunting sound early in the record to a more strident sound. You know, he was a big fan of Little Richard.
Yeah.
You know, that rock and roll kind of raspy, let it all hang out kind of vocal. And parts of this song, you can hear some of that intensity that I wish we heard more of, frankly, from McCartney. It seems like he's invested in the song in a way that not all of his work leads you to believe. It is, dare I say, Lennon-esque in its intensity in certain parts. Beware My Love from Paul McCartney and Wings on Sound Opinions.
That is Beware My Love by Paul McCartney, one of Greg's choices for his solo high points. After a short break, we'll expand our discussion to talk about the lows of Lennon and McCartney as solo artists. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot here with Jim DeRogatis, and that's a bit of Maybe I'm Amazed by Paul McCartney. This week, Jim and I are debating the post-Beatles releases of McCartney and John Lennon. And before the break, we talked about the highs of their respective careers, and now we're going to dig into the lows.
You know, years ago, 1997, the latest much-hyped then at the time, Paul McCartney returned to form, brilliant solo album had just come out. Flaming Pie. Right? So South by Southwest has this panel, right? Let's reassess the solo career of Paul McCartney. So, you know, at the last minute, they said, oh, man, this panel's going to be boring if it's just a McCartney love fest. Hey, Jim, would you go on and be the contrarian? Now, I have Paul. His face is on my arm. The cover of Revolver was an extremely painful tattoo. I am a fan, okay? But, you know, these guys were waxing rhapsodic about the genius of Paul. And then, you know, it was my role to throw the spanner in the works, as George Harrison would say. And all I would have to do is say, Ebony and Ivory. The girl is mine.
'Cause I really feel it's time. You know she'll tell you I'm the one for her. 'Cause she said I blow her mind. The girl is mine.
McCartney's low points were much lower than Lennon's. Will you give me that?
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely give you that.
I think if I have to choose one, and again, we're not trying to be gratuitously mean here. I don't think it serves either of these geniuses to say they were infallible. In fact, I think it's the low points that make the genius that much higher. But there is no defending, and people on that panel tried, silly love songs. The only song that I think is worse is Uncle Albert Admiral Halsey with that gypsy part at the end. You know, hands across the water, and then somebody goes, water. I hate that song. And this song and silly love songs, they get in my head and they won't go away.
Many, many worse McCartney tracks than that one.
Give me one. Let him in.
I'll give you one. How about Temporary Secretary?
Oh, yeah. I was almost going to go with that. Yeah.
All right. So McCartney makes a record in 1980 called McCartney 2, trying to evoke some of the feel, the stripped-down spirit of his debut record. And it is an abysmal failure. Almost every track on this record makes me want to leave the room screaming. This is perhaps the most excruciating 3 minutes in the entire McCartney canon. And that's a heavy, high road to climb, you know. But it is one of those things where, yeah, this is pretty annoying almost. It gets more annoying as it goes along. I think this is almost McCartney's attempt at sort of making something along, okay, I'm going to mess around with this new, you know, technology and make a sort of a synth keyboard-based recording to keep up with the kids.
And today.
I mean, it's pretty amateurish in the way he approaches it and in terms of the musical execution. Usually McCartney gives you something in the song to hang on to, a melody or something. Mm-hmm. And then the idea is just unbelievably sexist, too. Disposable secretary idea. He thought it was funny at the time. You know, I had a disposable secretary once, you know.
Although there's a Lennon song that's aged even worse, whose title we shall not even mention.
Yeah, so Temporary Secretary, I think, I have to say that I don't think you can top this one or bottom this one.
Can you find for me someone strong and sweet fitting on my knee? She can keep her job if she gets it wrong. Ah, but Mr. Marks, I won't need her long. All I need is help for a little while. We can take dictation and learn to smile. And a temporary secretary is what I need for to do the job. I need a
You're right. You're right, Greg. That's abysmally bad. Abysmally so. But Lennon, if Lennon had not been assassinated on the streets of New York, December 1980, just as Double Fantasy was coming out, I think it would never have gotten the praise that it got. Give me Lennon at his worst. What do you think?
And what we haven't really focused on here is how each of these guys was a filter for each other. They sort of brought out each other's best ideas. Certain tracks that appeared on their solo records never would have made it onto a Beatles record because the other guy would have said, sorry, that's just not working.
If not, George or Ringo would have threatened to quit.
In Lennon's world, I think he was looking for some kind of buffer or filter or companion. You know, during the Walls and Bridges record, which I just played a track that I really loved, there was a ton of this kind of dross. It wasn't necessarily horrible, but it was just sort of this mediocre middle ground stuff that never would have made it to a Beatles B-side, let alone an album. And when he starts collaborating with Elton John on this record...
Oh, no, you're not going to go there.
You realize, and I like Elton John, but the fact
Elton
that
John.
Lennon was desperate to have a collaboration with the reigning pop superstar of the era, speaks to his desperation at this point. Like, I'm just looking for some inspiration.
Are you really going to play Whatever Gets You
Whatever
Through the
Gets
Night?
Whatever Gets You Through the Night was
I love that
the
song.
Hit single.
Whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go there. I'm going to go to another Elton
collaboration. All right. That's fine.
On this record called Surprise Surprise.
Well, it's not
a surprise surprise. Not in any way. It is a boilerplate, mid-tempo, nothing of a rock track where he's, you know, expressing his love for his lover at the time, Mei Peng, you know, this sort of...
He's cheating on Yoko. It's the lost weekend.
Yeah. So he's running away from home and having this fling, and he's this lascivious track about his girlfriend at the time. And, you know, there's horns on it. And, you know, Lennon was never particularly proud of his voice, so he would always, you know, there would always be effects on his voice. You know, some of this approach filtered into Double Fantasy later on. I think that's one of the reasons we're so uninspired by so much of the latter-day Lennon solo music is because of this sense of the production's going to carry the weight of the fact that there's not really a song here. So Surprise, Surprise definitely fits into that category.
Yeah, that's dreadful, Greg. I'm glad you're not going to do Whatever Gets You Through the Night. Because I just on the concept alone, I know it's boogaloo, it's overdone, it's cheesy. I am not an Elton John fan, that Broadway theatricality he brings. But I just love that song. It's just the concept that, hey, man, do whatever's going to whatever you need to do to keep yourself alive.
Well,
all right,
he was doing that at that time.
So I think Lennon and McCartney, you are absolutely right. It's a brilliant point. They were both always looking for the balance that never existed again when they weren't a team. As always, we want to hear from you. What's your favorite Lennon or McCartney solo album and why? Call and leave a message on our hotline, 888-859-1800, or find us on Twitter or Facebook. Up next, we'll review rapper Vince Staples' latest album and a new disc from young drummer Micaiah McRaven. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Summertime in the LB wild, we gon' party to the sun, or the guns come out. JB first one fouled out, playing ball, now the whole city love you a how. Boy, we know they wasn't down from the get-go. Dirty got a dozen rounds, better get low. Lil Johnny gave his life for the fish. All he got was a plot and a bottle from the Winco.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis. That's a track from the new FM album by Vince Staples. It's called Feels Like Summer. Third studio album from this Long Beach, California artist, a crime-riddled area in which Vince grew up in. He got out of there through hip-hop. As a teenager, he started working with members of Odd Future and then made a collaborative mixtape, Stolen Youth, with the late Mac Miller, who produced that record. In 2015, his debut album, Summertime 06, was produced by No ID, a producer who picks his projects very carefully, got a lot of attention because of that, one of the most acclaimed albums of 2015 based on the work. Vince Staples proved that he was one of the most intriguing up-and-coming hip-hop artists of our time. In 2017, the follow-up Big Fish Theory incorporated dance and electronic elements. He was asked to perform with the Gorillaz on their Humans record, and now we have album number 3 from Vince Staples, FM. Here's a track from it before we review it. It's called Tweakin' from Vince Staples on Sound Opinions.
What hard in the wild, bounty foul, never text, never count. I suggest you plow. I'm the set synagogue, get blessed by the God. Don't get clapped on. This a young black man with a backbone. In a black home, I'm come back on. In a Batmobile, black no chrome, yeah. When Jabari died, was off the porch for homicides. Then when Heffy died, I bought some things to pass the guys.
But when Johnny died, all I had was shows booked. Down the burning hill, I don't care how my soul look. I know you gon' tell, I can tell by your froze look. But I love you still, flaws and all. You my dog, put me behind bars and all. Cause we came up at the park. It's just crazy seeing everybody change when things get hard.
We just lost somebody else this weekend.
That is a little bit of Tweakin' by Vince Staples from his third album. You haven't been saying it right, Greg. It's FM! Because he has the exclamation point.
Yeah.
You know, Vince Staples has made a point of saying in interviews there were no concepts, no more BS with this album, and yet it is indeed a concept album. It's a fascinating one. It's only 22 minutes long. Two of its tracks he doesn't even rap on. What is he doing here? He has created this concept here of essentially an FM radio broadcast on hip-hop radio on the West Coast. He's got an L.A. radio legend, Big Boy, coming in and doing some radio-type snippets. What radio means to Staples is, you know, commercial music consumption. And the lyrics here are examining this nihilism of Black America, drugs and gang violence, and he is not celebrating that. He's dealing with it as a reality against this backdrop of the best damn summer music we've heard, even though it's fall.
Left side, who got that life? Right side, who got that life? Nighttime, who got the guy? Outside, the end of my mind.
Right, this is a fun, breezy, wonderful party record that, in the same way his last album, Big Fish Theory, drew elements of the EDM underground, mm-hmm. he is now returning to that stuff he grew up listening to, which is that classic West Coast G-funk, right? The kind of party jam gangster rap of the 80s. He is saying, this is my pop album, right? But the melodies and the good time party grooves contrast amazingly with a very dark vision. You know, the lines are amazing. My black is beautiful, but I'll shoot at you. You know, he's saying at one point.
Don't be looking funny when we come up in the store. My black is beautiful, but I still shoot at you, dog. Tupac, Dev, tails off. Watch your footage.
Cold weather, don't stop no gun, or wrong hat, or wrong day. I killed my brother. These are amazing snapshots of the violence that he is, you know, contrasting with the uplifting power of its celebratory music. It's a fascinating record.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on about that. The G-Funk stuff, G-Funk in the early 90s, you know, we had Snoop Dogg, Nate Dogg, Warren G. These were great records made by top-notch producers. You know, celebratory records, as you say, about a very dark subject often, which was the gang violence in Long Beach. Two traditions, G-Funk and gang violence, side by side, growing mm-hmm. up together. He's not sugarcoating it in the least. And I interviewed him a few years ago, and he said, you know, I think people need to understand that not everybody here is a criminal. A lot of what we have to do is just basic survival.
Yeah.
Because there are no options there for a young man. You know, there's no YMCA, as he says. There's no real kind of recreational options other than joining a gang as a way to get through life. So it's a dire existence. And a lot of these songs are about ticking off the names of his friends who have died. You know, in that song, Tweakin', that we just played, you know, it's kind of a eulogy. And
yeah.
that chorus by Kehlani really breaks my heart every time.
We just lost somebody else this weekend. Think that I am jumping off the deep end. Nothing out of something now is leaving. Trying to find my peace of mind is fleeting.
It's this litany of every week there's a new body count.
Which you're not to even deal gonna, with. If you don't stop and start to look at those lyrics, you're not even going to get that from the nature of the
absolutely.
Music.
Absolutely. It is party music. It's a summer record, as you said. But at the same time, this dire subject matter. This is a record that really kind of focuses on the fact that this is kind of one of those traditions maybe we should be breaking at some point, but he sees no end to it. I just want to make one more point here about Don't Get Chipped. That reference to Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come, only applying to a very few African Americans in America right now.
Not all of us.
The rich and the famous, the change is gonna come. But I'm not going if my gang won't come, is the key line there.
Sammy, tell me that a change gon' come. I'm not going if my gang won't come. If you see me pull that thing, don't run. Playing ball if I swing.
It's like, it doesn't matter that I'm getting out of this, but I've got an entire city that is still caught up in this, and we need to get out.
Tell me if you agree. I think that with this extraordinary 22-minute, mere eight-track, and really, he doesn't rap on two of them, really like six-track mini-album, I think this is where he vaunts right to the top as an absolute equal peer of Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's incredibly... I mean, if it's possible to say this about Vince Staples, I think he's almost underrated because he's not nearly as prolific in some ways as Kendrick is right now. But at the same time, I think Vince Staples is one of our most enlightened and powerful MCs, without a doubt.
That is a little bit of a track called Turtle Tricks from the new album by Micaiah McRaven, Universal Beings. Greg, what a fascinating backstory this young drummer, composer, producer has. He prefers the term beat scientist. He's born in Paris, the son of a jazz drummer and a Hungarian folk singer. He grows up in New England, in Massachusetts, relocates to Chicago in 2006. He is very much part of the avant jazz, experimental, electronic music underground of Chicago, a frequent collaborator, Jeff Parker, probably best known to the rock world as a member of Tortoise, right? Mm-hmm. That underground, incredibly fertile scene here in our city where giving it any one name doesn't do it justice. As a drummer and producer, McRaven has been following this path of live, often improvised music, which he then takes to the studio and electronically manipulates. It's fascinating, the working process. Let's listen, and then we'll give our opinions on what we're actually hearing. This is a track called Atlantic Black by Micaiah McRaven from the new album Universal Beings.
That is Atlantic Black from the new Micaiah McRaven record, Universal Beings. Jim, I'm really happy to be addressing this record at this moment because we are seeing a wave of jazz that I think our more rock-oriented or hip-hop-oriented listeners will appreciate. You know, you're seeing artists like Robert Glasper and Kamasi Washington, crossing over into playing like rock venues and rock festivals now. Thundercat, another example of an artist like that. Flying Lotus on the hip-hop side, bringing a lot of jazz elements into his work. Mekhi McRaven's right in that pocket. You know, what you mentioned about the way this record was recorded, the live element with the electronic editing at the end, this goes all the way back to Teo Macero and those Miles Davis records, Bitches Brew and things like
that. Oh, I'm angry
There's
you got there first.
A long tradition.
I was going to bring that up. I'll give you another one, too. Anthem of the Sun by Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
Right? You know, my favorite Dead album recorded during these you know, famously shambolic live improvisations and then electronically
right.
manipulated.
And you know, he's working with the young up-and-comers in these four separate sessions that are preserved on this recording. You know, and it's a vibe record as much as a song-based record, and it's a great vibe because you get the feel of musicians recording in a room, and then he's working with these and manipulating these tracks, sampling, chopping, looping afterwards to create these little discrete pieces of music. You know, for me, the highlight is that British Barbadian tenor saxophone player, Shabaka Hutchings, which we heard on that song, which we just played. It gets really fierce, you know, midway through. And Hutchings is right in the center of that. We get this great trancey, hypnotic vibe on the London sessions with a song called Sweet House, which some people have said that's kind of a house music song. You know,
yeah,
maybe there's
yeah,
a reason that it's called that. So you're getting these wonderful cross-pollination of genres in this recording, and I think it's just a wonderful introduction to this new wave of jazz for people.
Neither you nor I are going to make a comparison to Electric Miles lightly.
Right.
We are not being hyperbolic. You know, kids, let me tell you, you know, one of the downsides of being a popular music critic is, and I know you feel the same way, we don't get to buy anything anymore. We listen to everything. Not that people even buy records anymore. I can't wait to go out and buy the vinyl album here because it's a double album and one single vinyl side is devoted to each of the four sessions, New York, Chicago, London, L.A. This is a global tour of the wealth of creativity happening in, you name the genre, hip-hop, electronic music, ambient music, jazz, all of the above, and many more. I mean, it's a brilliant and yet easy to listen to, seductive album.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
As often as possible on Sound Opinions, we like to take a trip to that desert island. The waters are a little cold this time of year, Jim, but you're going to swim out there anyway and play a track you cannot live without. What's it
going to
be?
I'm going to go someplace warm, Greg. I'm going to Los Angeles. I had a pal come visit from Utah, and he said, man, I feel a little guilty about admitting this. I went to see X, right, which is now a nostalgia act. And that got me on this X kick again, and I had to make a 5.5-hour drive to Des Moines and back each way, 5.5 hours. And I just listened to Under the Big Black Sun nonstop for 10-plus hours through the cornfields between Chicago and Des Moines. Oh, my God. I remember being a kid when this album came out, 1982, the major label debut by X after two fairly rough-sounding, independent, hardcore punk records. All of a sudden, it's like that moment where Dorothy in Wizard of Oz, everything goes Technicolor. You know, X embraces its country roots. It embraces American roots music, brings it into the hardcore punk, and comes up with a sound I'd never heard before. And then you go see them live. And DJ Bonebreak was this phenomenal monster drummer. And Billy Zoom scared me. You know, this rockabilly god with a frozen face who would stare right through you playing these incredible Chuck Berry on acid licks. Of course, John Doe and Exene Cervenka. Trading those harmonies. I don't think they ever sounded better than Under the Big Black Sun. The song that kept jumping out to me was The Have-Nots. 1982, John Doe, in his primo beat poet Charles Bukowski phase, is talking about the bottom of the 99% of America. Dawn comes soon enough for the working class. It keeps getting sooner or later. This is the game that moves as you play. He is surveying the bottom of the barrel drunk bars of Los Angeles that Bukowski made famous, right? And he name checks a bunch of them at the Heidi High and the Hula Girl, right? He's going down the list, going bar hopping. And he's talking about people who no longer have any hope. All they have to look forward to is a shot and a beer after another hard-earned day. But the propulsion of the guitar and the wonderful harmonies that Exene adds to her then husband's rough growl, there's this glimmer of hope. X, The Have-Nots, from 1982 on Sound Opinions.
Drink at the bar.
The Have-Nots by X, Under the Big Black Sun. Greg, go listen to that album again. What a
great
record. Oh, man,
you don't have to convince me twice to do that. That's a great record. Great choice, Jim. Next week on the show, we're going to do some buried treasures. Great records that you need to hear.
You can download Sound Opinions wherever you get your podcast thingies. The show, as always, was produced by Brendan Banizak, Alex Claiborne, Ayanna Contreras, and Andrew Gill. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
New messages.
All you gotta do is go, and I'll be there.
Hey guys, this is Josh calling from Berkeley, California. I was very excited to hear the Greta Van Fleet review. I did have the occasion to see them perform live, and I was pretty excited about it, but immediately pretty bored. The lead singer, his skills cannot be denied. He has a great voice.
In the darkness, way below, it's my heart till the
but as my friend said at the concert, you've got to earn the right to jam. And this band just kind of noodled and jammed without having anything to say. These guys do not know what they're doing. I hope that they can develop into something very interesting, because the lead singer is actually fantastic. So we'll see what the future holds. In a way, it's cool to see rock and roll on this spectrum. Thanks so much, guys. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Ted calling from Chicago. I just listened to the protest songs episode, and one song that I thought would have really played well there is Jason Isbell's White Man's World.
There's no such thing as someone else's war. Your creature comforts aren't the only things worth fighting for. You're still breathing, it's not too late. We're all carrying one great burden, sharing one fate.
It's a touching song. It talks about the history of racism in our country. I was at the Ryman last week, and I heard him play it to the Nashville crowd of 98% white people. And I think that he's bringing a great message to all communities but as a folk slash alt country slash rock white artist, is a great opportunity to change minds. Love the show. Thanks. Bye.
My name is Carol. I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I really enjoyed the song Mississippi It's Time by Steve Earle.
Come on, Mississippi, Mississippi, don't you reckon it's time?
Having grown up in the South, you know, it brought tears to my eyes listening to Dixieland sort of being intertwined with that.
Wish I was in a land that never had the soul in Bundy Jimmer.
And one of the lyrics he wrote was called All the Crosses Burned and the Lessons Unlearned Left a Scar Across My Heart and It's 10 Miles Wide. And overall, I think he writes a great protest song. Thank you. Bye.
I said I love you.
Hi, my name is Charlene Carruthers, and my favorite protest song is actually I Love Being Black, which is written by Janae Taylor of Stripes 100.
I love the color of my skin.
Color of my skin.
Cause it's the skin that time made.
I love this song because it's affirming, it's revolutionary, and it's an invitation for people to love themselves and to be a commitment to collective liberation.
Everywhere.
My name is Mike Cohn from Atlanta, Georgia, by way of the Virgin Islands. In reference to your topic, protest music, I don't have any modern contemporary, but I think some of the ones that still hold today is Black Cop and The Sound of the Police by KRS-One.
Black cop, black cop, black cop. 30 years ago, there were no black cops. You couldn't even run, drive round the block. Recently, police trained black cop to stand on the corner and take gunshot.
Those songs still hold weight to this day. I mean, to the letter, to the word. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.